What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to Valleytown episode 99 on Chan Man B. And he's Noxious, and we've got a Phillies fan over here, brand new to the show. Tyler, what's happening?
What's up? Yeah, I have a confession, though. I'm not really a Phillies fan. I just bought the hat because I like the color.
Oh, man. You're like those Yankees fans that just wear the Yankees caps for the just because yeah. It's cool to
just
wear
cause.
Them.
Just because, yeah.
Just because of the color. There's got to be a lot of caps that are that color, right?
Yeah, sure, but I happened to stumble across this one. So.
Okay. All right. Well, do you live in Philadelphia or no?
I live in Europe, the Netherlands.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What am I talking about?
So it makes no sense, right?
So you're basically in an airport. Better. You're basically in an airport when you bought that, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, everybody, pretty... awesome show we've got planned, at least a ton of stuff to talk about, given this is the first one since the expansion has come out. So this is always the most exciting time to talk about new decks. You know, we've been spending weeks talking about new cards. Now it's time to talk about the decks that we put together. So we'll definitely be doing that, talking about the meta that's establishing, a couple events, Batstone, and also Twitch Plays Hearthstone was pretty fun yesterday. I figured we'd touch on that to start off the show. And then we're going to do Mechatorps Workshop, just a quick one. Few cards. I came up with one. A patron came up with a couple, and then end things off with Q&A. If you guys want to participate in Q&A, go ahead and email your questions to valuetown@chanmanv.tv. We've actually got quite a few emails, so we're just going to be doing emails, and I don't know, maybe just from here on out, we're just going to start doing emails, because people have been really liking that and emailing questions during the week, so definitely kudos to them for doing that. Okay, well, going to start things off, Tyler, having you on here, our week in Hearthstone. This is the segment that we just talk about what we've been doing just from the standpoint of Hearthstone and the community or whatnot. And, we were just talking before the show, and you're telling me you were watching Batstone too, which is going on right now, by the way. So yeah, if you want to watch some play on the side while listening to us, you can do that too. So have you been watching Batstone a bunch?
Been watching it. I've not watched everything. I've been trying to catch as much as I can, but yeah, generally I've been streaming myself as well, so it's hard to watch everything.
Yeah, of course.
I haven't had much time to consume content either because of that. So the whole Bastion thing with other people's card reviews, other people's decks, and everything, I haven't really had time to watch much of that.
I think it's actually good not to. Like, it's good not to look at other people's rank one NA decks, because it just doesn't influence you, or at least in the very beginning, it's good to just discover stuff yourself. At least that's how I feel. And then once you get stuck, you get to a point where it's like, oh shoot, I don't know what else to do, then kind of see what other people are doing, and then it's kind of cool. But right now, whenever you get to just really experience everything for the first time, this is the best, man. And I try to preserve that as much as I can, if it's possible.
Yeah.
But with Batstone, what's interesting is they ended up banning patches, right? So that was interesting. Yeah. Basically, I think the rules or just limits that they put on deck building are no patches, and you have to have at least 10. Mean Streets of Gadgets and cards in your decks.
Okay, holy crap, I see.
Yeah, so...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty... that's why we're seeing some interesting things.
It's all Jade Golems everywhere, right? That's what it is?
Some. Definitely some Druids, just mixed with, Malagas or just...
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah. So, seeing that, some Reno decks. Reno's got plenty of new cards in them.
Yeah.
I haven't seen too... Oh, go ahead, Tyler.
The funny thing is... with the new decks that have been going around, the new strongest decks, they already are including 6 to 8 of the new cards.
Yeah, exactly. There's no problems, right? Adding 10 cards. That's easy. Watching some of the decks has been actually pretty cool to see. And some folks, Frozen's adding the freaking Hog Riders and stuff. Man, he adds 6/6 to all of his decks. So I'm just okay. All right. I thought this might be a meme thing, but it's actually
the hand size thing. Yeah, if Reno Lock is a thing and Reno decks in general are a thing, that's always triggering. Pretty much all the time.
Yeah, that's definitely something I've noticed. It's been cool. I haven't seen too many grimy goon decks though, so that I don't know.
They're really good when they curve. Really, really, really good when they curve, but. just like I expected, one of the big drawbacks of most of the cards is like they're a bit too expensive. So Smuggler's Crate is great in Paladin, like a one mana card, the spell buffs your stuff in your hand. Not the crate, sorry, Smuggler's Run in Paladin. And the Grime Street Outfitter, right? Those two are the cheapest and they buff your entire hand and they don't require much of an investment. Whereas, you know, if you want to go to the five drop that does the same thing, then it's only buffing, you know, once usually. So you're paying five mana for the same effect as the Run and the Outfitter. So that's probably the reason why you haven't seen much of it. But the decks that are good that include the Runner, like the Run and the Outfitter, I feel like they've been doing very well. Like the more aggressive Paladins or, you know, draw a bunch of 1/1s, buff everything, vomit them, that's been doing pretty good.
I mean, I think the biggest issue with those decks, because I played some of them too. I played the Murloc one too. And the issue with me is just, it's just board clear. I just think all these Reno locks and basically all the Cabal classes have such good board clear that, you know, you wipe the board once, it sets you back quite a bit. You wipe the board twice, it's game over, right? And I've just been seeing that. Either I kill them in the first six turns, you know, like kind of like Warrior and Shaman, but instead with goon cards. But either that happens, or I just, you know, I end up running out of steam and don't draw Divine Favor, just die kind of thing. And it sucks. But I wish it was a lot stronger. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the goon decks right now, Tyler?
I don't know. We're talking about the Paladin one, right?
Yeah, just the Paladin, just all the buffing stuff.
I think people haven't explored it enough. I think there's definitely some kind of viable build possible that's really strong.
Yeah.
I haven't faced it too many times, but a few times that I faced it, I definitely saw potential. Like, you can snowball so quickly when you get the right buffs. And then
it's like you said, Noxious, like if you curve great, it's very, very hard to beat. And
it's almost unbeatable. Yeah, like it's like imagine Jade Idol Druid starting on turn three. Like if they start getting 3/3s and 4/4s on three in Jade Idol, you're screwed. You lost. Like in Jade Golem, that is.
Yeah.
And Grimy Goons, just if they curve well, they by default have everything that's like a 5/5 Aldor on turn three. And then they go like a 6/6 on turn four. And it just gets stupider and stupider.
Yeah.
The problem is like they need to have like Smuggler's Run with a decent hand with Grime Street Outfitter into a playable. So a lot of the approaches have been, you know, were Divine Shield based, right? Like you saw people try to play Horse Rider, even Silent Knight, Argent Squire, just try to make sure that buff not only applies once in one attack, but twice because of Divine Shield. So like that buff gets exponentially stronger when you have something like Divine Shield slapped onto it.
Right.
I think I lost it like twice yesterday, and I was asking Twitch chat, did this guy just nut draw me, or is the deck just good? And I honestly don't know, because it felt like it was all like that pretty consistently if you build it right. So
yeah.
The problem is you have four cards that do that effect, right? You really only have four with the Run and the Outfitter. So you need to get at least one of those in the opening hand. That's very likely, right? Like you're gonna find one of them. But oftentimes for the deck to really be good, you need two. And that's the problem. You can get one consistently, but that's not good enough. You need two to really push the deck to the point where it's literally just Jade Golem you down, like in terms of power level, right at the early onset of turn three. But if they only get one, then
you can't skip a turn. Like you can't have an off turn where you hero power, or else you literally have lost because you need that snowball. And I even did the Outfitter and the is it the crate that's the one? What's the one drop that just
Smuggler's Run?
Smuggler's Run, yeah. In the Outfitter. I added those to even just Dragon Paladin just to see. Yeah, and when it curves well, it's literally unstoppable. But if you miss a turn, you're just done. Like that was the most obvious to me. That deck was just like, oh, this is amazing when it works. But man, when it doesn't work, I just miss one turn. I lose to like Jade decks or. I mean, much less the super fast stuff. The super fast stuff is tough, yeah. So, it's pretty interesting. But I think the biggest thing, though, at least with the meta, because we're kind of talking about meta right now in Batstone, is obviously the pirate decks, right? The pirate decks have just been the talk of the community. I think it's by far the most popular decks, and we've seen it start off with Warrior, right? With the arms, pirate, warrior, just everything to the face. And now it's transition to our good old Cancer Shaman, which it always comes back, man, to Shaman.
It's just insane. I love talking about this bit because it's so much the deck is so much cancer. It's basically the pirate package. And it fits in every class that has weapons because it's even put into a staple in Rogue right now. All the current Rogue builds.
It's true.
Have the pirate package, which is the Buccaneer and Saltsea Deckhand. Pirates.
Let's definitely take a look at these decks while we're talking about it. And I've got the left one, the Shaman. And that's actually Spo's deck. And then the right one is Sintalo. I always just call him Sint. And that's his warrior deck on the right. And I think the most popular deck, like in all levels of Hearthstone right now, is probably the right one. And this is the warrior.
I don't know if it's still as popular, but it was on like the first 4 days, 100%. Like that's.
I think it still is at lower ranks. I think the warrior is still the most. The shaman one is now starting to take over at the top ranks and moving itself down. But the warrior one that we're talking about, guys, is the one that if you play Hearthstone, there's no way in hell that you haven't seen it. It's just the one with all the weapons, you know, the early pirates, just that turn one that throws down three things. I mean, I think we've all experienced that very, very often with patches and small time buccaneer and either South Sea or it's Nazoth's first mate, right?
Now, usually you have Lowly Squire on one hand and then you have buccaneer. Like, that's the thing. Small time buccaneer makes weapon classes so powerful.
Small time buccaneer is way better than Lowly Squire, in my opinion. At least
but for Rogue, you know, you considered Lowly Squire in your tempo decks or if you're aggro decks. Because it was like, okay, I can get a 2-2 on turn two, and I'm often just daggering anyway. But now you have a 3-2 on turn two, and it brings out a patches. It's like, okay, I have a 1-1 that I can ping with, trade with my dagger, and I have a 3-2 left over. God damn it. This is so sick.
And if you don't have an answer, that guy does like 9 damage to you, dude. it's like that early flame imp that just fucks you up because you can't do anything about it. Wait, why do you think it's so strong, Tyler? These decks that we're talking, or at least this warrior deck, is probably the fastest deck we've ever seen in Hearthstone. Especially from the standpoint of like linear and fast. This is easily the fastest. The shaman one's slower, but the shaman one's more resilient. It has like crazy burst speed and resilience. That's why it makes it so strong right now. But
the shaman one is actually really fast, arguably even faster than the warrior one, because the shaman one beats the warrior one easily.
Yep, that's true.
Like by four. So
I think it comes down to Jade Claws, right?
Jade Claws, yeah. Like you have Jade Claws and Spirit Claw, and then you have so many one drops, so you never miss a curve. And I've tried to explain it on stream earlier, but the reason why I think it's so strong is because you curve out perfectly into 4 mana, 7-7.
Yep, it's the 7-7 that kills
you. You never miss a single mana with this list. Like, you play your curve 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 7-7 comes on board. And they already had trouble dealing with patches and small time buccaneer and all your other one drops.
Yeah.
And then you just drop a 7-7 and you win the game.
It's kind of what's interesting to me is because like the metagame is not able right now to like control warrior is kind of pushed out
dead.
For many reasons.
It's dead.
Like this kind of fast start where you could usually answer it with like Whirlwind Revenges, that's been taken over by Patron Warrior, right? Patron Warrior's seen a resurgence in many levels because it answers these types of decks quite okay. Like it has the weapons early game, it can still play a lot of removal, and it can smash in a patron board against some of the smaller minions. But like the overlord of this entire meta is like Reno Lock, keeping everybody in check aside from the shaman maybe bursting you in the face sometimes before you're able to stabilize. And that's just the nature of, you know, Lava Burst, Jade Lightning, Lightning Bolt, you know, that can happen. But otherwise, Reno Lock is keeping so much in check right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's weird because I felt like it was Shaman keeping Reno Lock in check too. It's a weird dynamic between the two because what beats Reno Lock right now if it's
nothing?
Not
well, Jade Druid,
pure
I'd
speed.
Say. Some people Jade say Druid, Jade Druid loses to it.
Yeah.
I disagree.
I mean, there might be a hybrid version of the old, you know, like the Druid from last release mixed with Jade that...
You cycle, Gadgetzan. If you play the cycle list, you pretty much never lose, but you have to play the cycle list, the spell base.
And you have to survive a combo, too, with, you know, those Leroy faceless combos, too. So it's interesting. Those of you wondering what the Shaman deck is, it's basically... from a standpoint of pirate, it's a mixture of pirates and all the, you know, it's like a mixture of pirates, jade, and overload cards. So early game, you've got the pirates like Patches and South Sea Deckhand, Small Time Buccaneer. And then from the standpoint of like overload, you got your typical OP cards, Tunnel Trog and Totem Golem mixed with the Jade Claws and Feral Spirit and 7-7, you know, Flame Wreath. And then you've got some Jade Claws or just Jade cards mixed in there with the Lightning, Jade Lightning, which can go to the face, as well as Aya Blackpaw just for some quick value if you need to fill the board again. And a combination of that, guys, is like an extremely consistent storm. It's, you know, you might clear the first part, you might be able to get that first heal out and survive those initial pirates, but then you got to face like the onslaught of, you know, Trog, Feral Spirit into Flame Wreath, and you're just like, fuck.
That's, you can do that's a little death, bit of man. Like answering, but then eventually it just does like the old mid-range shaman or the old aggro mid-range before it started shifting towards the like heavy mid-range style, where it's just like, okay, I got curved, now what? And Jade Claws really, really helped solidify that early game of theirs, because suddenly they get a free ping. You know how Patches gives you a free 1-1, like a free resource for no cost?
Yep.
This is kind of their Patches, and they get like two of them in the deck, and they always have a 1-drop anyway, and they also get Patches on top of it. So they just have like 1-1s coming out of nowhere, Flame Tongues to use with them. Even Patches in your hand isn't a problem, because you can at least Stone Dust Boar with him with a Flame Tongue next to it. It just does so much. Like, this list has everything board control-wise. Like, it's insane.
And Flame Tongue is actually key there, because you have so much synergy with Flame Tongue. Patches is synergy. South Sea Deckhand works great with Flame Tongue, and it makes it that every single card just does so much. It has so much value that you just get overwhelmed every single time.
Yeah, and speaking to Tyler, what rank have you gotten in all the regions with these decks?
I just hit rank 1 Legend on EU, like, 2 hours ago before we started the show.
Nice.
And then top 10 on NA and top 10 on Asia, just with this list.
Damn. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good power there. And like he was saying too, the Shaman one beats the Warrior one pretty easily. Because it's got Taunt, it's got Portal, it's got everything you need to basically beat a lot of those weaker minions too. So, definitely check it out.
I have a question. Like, do you think if Reno Lock like becomes the overlord of the metagame, like, Hunter feels really weak against everything, but maybe it's okay against Reno Lock? Like, does it even have a way to become? Because there's always a point in the old metagame where Hunter would come out to answer Warlock, right? Like, Hunter was always there to say, you know what, you're Warlock, tap, life tapping, let me come out here and punch you in the face hard enough that you just can't stop it. And that's still doable. Like, you can still go Hyper Aggro Hunter and nail it, because you don't get punished by oozes as much. You can still play minions and flood damage to the enemy's face. But the issue is, you lose to everything else right now. Like, literally everything else.
I don't think Hunter is the answer either, right? I mean,
like, it would have to do the job better than the Shaman does right now.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And it would have to do it much better, because it would lose to everything else, whereas the Shaman would not lose to everything else.
For tournament play.
That's
where I'm mostly looking at it. Because for ladder, I think for ladder, if there's a Hunter deck that's good on the mid-range side with, you know, maybe Smuggler's Crate, you know, I still think that card's got some potential and should be explored a bit. For tournament play, I think Hunter might be a pick. It's just, like, the power level of decks right now seems to exceed that of Hunter so much.
Actually, we should bring up the Reno Lock. I didn't actually have that one. Anybody have a link to the Reno Lock? We should talk about that. That's obviously a huge part of the meta right now, given we just have people just constantly rank 1 with Reno Lock.
There's a new list every day that's like 2 or 3 cards difference on the Reno Lock of someone getting rank 1 legend.
Yeah, what do you guys think of outvaluing a Reno Lock? Like, going, you know, just a heavier control deck that beats Reno Lock?
I mean, I've seen Reno OTK Priest do it, but it's one of those weird things where you have to have a very like diluted list to beat Reno Lock specifically. I mean, you could just find better combo decks for that. Malgo's Druid is probably going to come back. Like, that's just natural.
If the Reno runs Jaraxxus, then you're never gonna be able to pull off that plan.
Dirty rat, baby.
That's right. Dirty rat.
You got a
right.
Dirty rat. Like, I think that card is, you know, we talked about it on Value Town a while back, yeah. Right? And Zalea wasn't too keen on it. We weren't too sure. I like the general idea and the disruption effect of it, but we didn't know if it would see play because we didn't know if the metagame would be slow enough that we'd like to give our opponents something on the board that we can answer right away. Because if it just got, you know, if Zoo had stuff in their hand and you gave them a free Doom Guard, yeah, that's pretty bad. But if you can target control decks with that, that is so disruptive. And that card has the potential to be, like, not Yogg-Saron on level, you know, annoying, but it's just really tilting, right? Like, the best Dirty Rat in a control mirror kind of determines who gets screwed because they lose a win condition. Like, it's really, really polarizing.
It's by far, I would say, it's personally not my favorite card, but it's my favorite card from the standpoint of just objective design, like added to this game. I think the Dirty Rat card, it functions like in the many different ways. It can function. It's a great card actually to have against the Warrior, by the way.
Aggro, yeah. Hyper, I mean, aggro, it's good against.
Yeah, and, I mean, it pulls out some of their cards, you know, when they're not ready for it. I mean, very few of them actually when it comes to the aggro Warrior, but it is a 2/6 taunt, so they crash at least one minion plus a weapon, or sometimes it's like a few minions, right? So it functions well that way. But the biggest thing for me is that it allows for playmaking in Hearthstone, and I feel like we're missing that. I've been harping on that for a while now, is that we're missing playmaking cards that are exciting to watch. That isn't RNG. I mean, it is RNG to an extent, but you know, you're affecting your opponent, you know, like you're disrupting your opponent in a big way. And your opponent doesn't feel cheated when that happens too. You know what I mean? Like it I think it's a different kind of feeling. And given that the set is so Battlecry heavy, that the rat is so perfectly like designed and used as a countermeasure. And we've seen it already, right? We've seen Brand Dirty Rat into mind control techs and just freaking amazing fun as shit like scenarios with Reno Lock and whatever Reno deck pretty much with that.
Yeah, Reno deck just all run the package at this stage.
Yeah. And then Dirty Rat screws up Jaraxxus. It screws up, you know, Reno. It screws, I mean, it's so disruptive and it's beautiful card. Like I really, really like
that's
what
card. I kinda hate about it is that if it comes out to like a Reno mirror match, like I kill your Kazakus with Dirty Rat, you are screwed, my friend. Like Kazakus is out, you're fucked. GG. Like let's move on. I kill your Reno. Well, now suddenly, like, it's not as bad as in a control mirror, but sometimes it'll just give me the edge in the long game. I get to take your Jaraxxus. Like, there's so many cards that matter.
Yeah, easily Dirty Rat and Kazakus for me so far have been the most either impactful or, I mean, Kazakus for me personally has probably been the best card. Like, because I just been,
insane.
Yeah, it's literally like the most important card in those decks. Like, for sure. And branding it too is like super important. That sheep effect is, I mean, it literally beats everything. It beats
you think
Druid.
Devolve is good.
Devolve is good until you can turn everything into a 1/1 sheep. And damn, those sheep are kind of cute with suspenders and shit. But but no, you can basically beat Jade decks, you can beat N'Zoth decks, you can beat whatever decks as long as you get that effect. But I've whiffed on it before, and it's just like really, really sucks when you whiff on it. But yeah, Kazak is definitely living up to expectations for sure. It's crazy.
I would even dare to say it's even more insane than Reno.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Like, yeah. I think by far it's the most powerful singleton deck. Actually, let's look at this Reno deck. This is, I think this is the one that Ray had whenever he got to it. We can take a look at it. So it's got a lot of the classic Reno cards, you know, just one of, I think let's just talk about the new ones. So Dirty Rat, Blast Crystal Potion.
Mistress of Mixtures. I've cut her out of my Reno Mage and my Reno Priest, but in Reno Lock, she's still fine because you're life tapping every time, no matter what. So it's still okay there. I'd like to just harp on the fact that Ink Master Solya is so bad. Like,
she's
I've tried
terrible.
To make
oh
Reno
my
Reno
yeah.
Mage, and every time I'm looking to cut something at the very end of the day, I'm like, this is the one card in my deck that seems like it's a fit, but it's just not right for this Reno
you
Mage.
You just
list.
Can't afford to, and you can't afford to lose health as a mage. It's really Yeah, it's really weird. There's not a lot of choices too for spells that make it really enticing.
Because Alka's Potion is the only one that that's about that the comes best to mind. One.
That and Portal. Those are probably the two best choices, but it hasn't made as big a difference. I totally agree. But some of the other cards in this deck are also Abyssal Enforcer. That's a huge removal card that this deck needs. Second Rate Bruiser. What else here? It's interesting.
I mean, it's the typical Reno
list. That's pretty much it. It's not that many cards.
You need to understand that Kazakus brought back Reno because it gave them like a win. Like the fact that Fellfire Potion is a thing, Abyssal Enforcer is a thing. You can play Fellfire, like you don't even have to play the card. I don't know if every deck runs it because it's like still kind of risky against a certain portion of the meta, and you have enough AoE and Reno lock not to need it. If you're running the Dirty Rat package, it's a bit harder to fit. So it's really a matter of like where you want to put the priorities. And if you're running like Abyssal Enforcer plus Hellfire plus Shadow of Flame plus the Dirty Rat MC Tech plus Twisting Nether, I mean, Demon Wrath, like you're set on AoE. And Reno Lock just has everything right now. Like it got some new tools to toy around with, and it can always go one way or the other.
Yeah.
Like it's really good.
What do you think the weakness is, Tyler, for this deck?
It's hard to play. It's really hard to play.
The mirror match, that's the only one that really beats it. And yeah, it's really hard to play. The skill cap is insanely high, and I love that.
Yeah,
it's been a while since we had decks that had this high of a skill cap.
Yeah, and a lot of the skill that's involved in playing it has more to do with macro at times. You know, like, you don't have to play something this one turn, you know, because you have such great removal. You just have to let them commit to the board. And then, you know, if you're playing somebody good, they won't commit to the board. So you have this kind of chicken game. And, you know, the more time they give you, the better it is. It's a really cool cat and mouse type of thing that happens with this deck. And the way you're probably supposed to go is just go all in against the Reno Lock and hope that he just doesn't have answers. Because the longer you wait, that's when Bran right now is crazy strong. There are so many powerful battle cries, like whether it's Jade cards or it's Kazakus or, you know, we just talked about Dirty Rat in Mind Control. It's like shining right now. I can't have a deck without Bran. It's kind of crazy. But loving it, though. It's definitely really, really fun to have, you know, getting double 6/6s or giving double, you know, like, a, I don't know, 5/5, a 6/6 or whatever it is from Aya and even the Jade Spirit or whatnot. So good. So what do you, you know, we're talking about Reno Lock here, right? Actually, why don't we go in and talk about some of the other decks that we've been playing with this week. And all right, so I just showed the aggros. Okay, why don't we talk about Shaman? Because so I've been playing Evolve Shaman, and actually I've been playing Nazoth too. But my Evolve Shaman's right here on the left, and then Noxious's Nazoth Shaman is here on the right, which is the control Nazoth Shaman. Played both actually. They have some principles that are very, very similar, but I've enjoyed the Evolve Shaman, dude. I think the Evolve Shaman is, I mean, definitely you can get to Legend with it. And I think we've seen somebody get to Legend. I forget who exactly it was, but maybe it was the Rat maybe that got to it. Definitely you can get to it. I mean, I didn't look at his list, so this is my own list. And it's kind of a mixture. It's got a little bit of the Overload, a little bit, a lot of the Jade. And then it has just the Evolve combos with Doppelganger and Big Time Racketeer and even to some extent Jade Chieftain. And I used to have a Barnes instead of Bloodlust, just as another like crazy doppelganger Barnes evolve, you know, crazy just dream plays. But it turns out I didn't need it, and Bloodlust seemed to be a really good addition since I always had board control. And then if you just do the combo, you have board control after that, and then you just Bloodlust and finish. But yeah, Evolve Doppelganger, dude, 6 mana for 17 mana value, dude, every single time. Yep. And you can do it twice. There's nothing else that people can play that actually keeps up with that. So if
Wait,
you're
how much mana are the double gangers?
They're five each.
They're all five mana.
Yeah,
they're
you get three sixes, dude, and you can do it twice. Yeah, yeah. So whenever you make that play, if you're even in tempo, you just gain tempo. No matter if it's Jade or what you're playing against, you just gain tempo. Hopefully they don't have like all the removal. You probably bait removal with your first one, and then your second one is where you just kill. And it's crazy, you know, like sometimes you get the 2/3s, sometimes you get the 1/1s, but most of the time you get like 5/5s and, you know, 5.6s and stuff like that. And it's been surprisingly powerful. I thought it was actually just more meme when I was playing it, but then I'm like, holy shit, like Brand Doppel evolve. I mean, I just freaking win games, and like with, you know, possible bloodlust or no bloodlust. I don't know. Do you guys play Devolve at all?
I haven't played it at all, but the one card that caught my mind is caught my eyes is Bloodlust. That's so needed right now if you play a list like this.
Yeah.
Because you're never gonna beat Nolok if you don't run Bloodlust.
Yeah. You need some kind of burst, right? Just to take him down.
So important.
Yeah. And you can get your typical.
I'm actually gonna try it. I didn't even realize that the double gangers were.
Oh, they're all fives. Yeah, they're really good for that.
Yeah, they made specific cards to really synergize with the ball. That and the Racketeer. It's a 1/1 and a 6/6, and they're both sixes, right? But that, you know, that's 7 mana, and you get just about double, you know, double value. With Doppelganger, you actually get close to triple value, and that's, I don't think there's another play that gets you equal to like a triple mana value play like that in Hearthstone, much less just in this release. So that play, I think, is underrated right now. It's super strong in the mid game, and it can swing games. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody comes up with it. But you know, right now with the Shaman being so strong, it's like nobody will ever play this deck in tournaments because, you know, it's a single class type of format right now in Hearthstone.
Yeah, exactly.
It sucks, man. Totally sucks. And speaking of which, another Shaman. Like, talk to us about Nuzzoth Shaman, Noxious.
So this is a deck that I went with the Alt F4 Shaman Shell, which is just, you play, you know, Justicar, True Heart, Harrison Jones, Elise, Starseeker, and a bunch of control tools.
Yeah.
It's control Shaman. The AP drop, I think, started popularizing like a few months ago. And it's supposed to be a Shaman list without a win condition. We saw Tides of Time playing Nuzzoth Shaman that was a long time ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, well, if it ran Nuzzoth and those cards are still available, all we have to do now is, you know, cut out Stormcrack, for instance, include Jade Lightning, you know, that can sub out in the mid game if you have something that has 4 health to kill. Mm-hmm. Although nowadays you probably want Stormcrack back in. And I'm running Jade Claws, which gives me a lot of early game removal. The initial list only had one Spirit Claws, and now we have the ability to have minions on board throughout the game. So now we have a justification for Air Blackpaw and Jade Lightning and Jade Claws. So you have the Jade package, which always makes sense. Like, you don't have to play the Jade Chieftains necessarily, but in this deck, they kind of work.
Good.
You have the Nuzzoth, you know, portion working with Cairn, Sylvanas, White Eyes, which again also makes quite a bit of sense. Now, I don't think Cairn is necessary. I think maybe a Genie Water Speaker would be better fit, or, you know, Stormcrack on top of what we've got. But the hand can get a bit clogged sometimes with like really situational removal or heals you don't need, which is the big weakness of this type of deck. Which is why the Jade Golem portion really helped solidify what I think it was meant to do at first.
Yeah, Tyler, what do you think?
But this is beat, like in the current meta.
Yeah, it works. Right now, this is just...
But what is a beat, he's asking?
What is a beat right now? It beats Aggro Warrior, Aggro Shaman pretty much all day.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You just don't get killed by the aggro decks. I mean, the Reno decks are always a problem. Sometimes you can blow them out with Jade or well-timed Nuzzoth because they don't know what you're running right now. So obviously you have an edge on that front, which helps. The only problem, of course, is going to be like OTKs coming out of nowhere. Otherwise, like aggro decks, I built this to counter Aggro Warrior and Aggro Shaman because I was encountering them nonstop. And I'm like, all right, let's just shut that stuff down and climb through the ranks.
You have a, like, so I've played a lot of this too, and it's pretty similar. It's there's definitely like maybe three cards or they're a little bit different, or four cards a little bit different, but I mean, you can beat Jade decks too. There's definitely a window where you have that you can, you know, if you can get that value in, if you can get your, you know, Nuzzoth out, or even just get a Storm Guardian out, you know, from White Eyes.
Sylvanas, even.
Yeah, like, even Sylvanas. Then you can, you have like two turns where you can win. Then after that, you know, you just lose because they have bigger shit than you. But this deck is actually really challenging to play. Like when I play it, especially against the control decks, I mean, you don't have that many Death Rattle minions. So it's like something gets entombed or something gets, you know, sheeped or whatnot.
Priest,
it's like,
I hate my life.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's tough. It's like you really have to play super carefully and you know, value your Death Rattle, and you figure out a priority list for your Death Rattles. And for me, White Eyes went quickly to the top for me. Like, I didn't actually realize
in
that.
In this deck, yeah.
Yeah, like, it was actually one of the lowest ones, and I was like, holy shit, Storm Guardian is so important to my deck that I started playing it, and I started playing Ancestral Spirit just to get more value from some of the death rattles whenever I had it. Just in Azoth to be, yeah, just a little bit stronger. And, yeah, White Eyes became so important. In fact, I think, like, I don't play Karen, though. I think Sylvanas is throwaway.
Karen is not worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd advise anyone who's looking at this list, like, visually, just cut Karen out, find, like, Stormcrack, find room for maybe, I don't know, like, I wouldn't go as far as, like, a Jade Spirit, but Genie Water Speaker is, you know, definitely a good inclusion. Another card draw engine. I mean, we're running two knowledge. You can even cut one of those and play a Drake mid-game. Like, that's not even bad.
Yeah, it's not bad, too.
There's so
much
you can find room for.
Yeah, it's, the one great thing about Shaman is the removal. The removal is still one of the strongest in the game. The Elemental Destruction is, like, there's not much that dies. It's only a late-game Druid that survives that. So mid range, yeah. Well, Dragon Priest, you can wipe Dragon Priest. I beat tons of Dragon Priests.
Yeah,
Priest
sort of. I mean, kind of, but not really. Like, you really need to have them curve off one turn, right? If they miss a drop, you're fine. If they curve all the way through, God help you.
Just mulligan.
God save your soul.
But if you mulligan for Elemental Destruction, you can just reset them once.
No, but they get a 3/6 on 4, and then it keep curving like a 5/6, and it keeps going up and up and up and up, and it's an average. I mean, honestly, I give them so much good discovery from Draconid Operative to clean up my own Jade Golem shenanigans.
Dude.
They just flip it. They just eventually flip it upside down. Like, I'm ahead, and then Entomb White Eyes and Entomb Sylve rip me. Like, I start over. But
dude, what do you think?
Dragon Priest is more popular, so you don't have to worry about the double Entomb, double death.
So in competitive, Tyler, you think Dragon Priest will be just there for... I mean, do you think it's good enough to be top tier right now?
I think it's being pushed out by Renolog.
I think Renolog is
keeping everything in check right now. And you're just trying, in competitive, you're just trying to play decks that beat Renolog.
Yeah, which is...
That's what a top deck is right now. But also, one other thing that I wanted to point out is it's insane to me how many archetypes Shaman has right now.
I know, but it's Gexley. Isn't that crazy? It's crazy.
Just gained a few more.
Yeah, it's gained a few more, and, you know, this is not a knock against Shaman. This is just what the classes should be. Like, it should be rich in tool sets and the ability to make it, and we have to change formats, guys, for Hearthstone competitive. Like, we can't just, you know, not have the ability to have multiple decks from a certain class. Like, it's driving me crazy, like, watching, you know, basically these type of decks be penalized for the shortcomings of the format itself. So instead of just having multi-class and that diversity, we need diversity within each class too, and that's really hurting Hearthstone, and actually in general for me.
Well, I was worried about tri-class cards, right, because of that a little bit, which is you homogenize, you know, Druid and Shaman. If they play all mid-range Jade Golem, you've kind of homogenized the whole thing. Fortunately for us, Rogue Jade Golem, Shaman Jade Golem, I mean, Shaman Jade Golem can be anything, but Druid Jade Golem, they're very different, right?
Yeah, luckily they're very, very different. And they did a good job of that, designing it. Some of the classes are very removal heavy, right? More of a tempo flip. And the other one's very, very value heavy, right? And like with the Druid. So they did a really good job with that. And I'm glad it's not too powerful yet, at least, because it's, you know, it'd be super linear and easy to play and, you know, like, Cthunish, in my opinion. I don't want it to go that route. And so far it hasn't.
I think Grimy Goons could have, right? If they had done Grimy Goons, like, you know, the smuggler, the 3-mana neutral guy, the 2/4 that buffs one card in your hand with +1/+1.
Yeah.
If that guy had been a paladin card that said everything in your hand, then suddenly you have like a nightmare on your hands.
Yeah, yeah. I
mean, that's when shit starts hitting the fan for that.
That's true. That's true.
And it's one of those things where they carefully chose what they wanted to give who. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hunter's got heavy single target buffs, and Warrior's got let's buff weapons and a bit of those taunt minions to give them an identity. But, like, they've approached the themes that they wanted to give very differently, to the point where, you know, a card like Cruel the Unshackled is just not played. Like, it's just not playable, even.
It's just not good. I mean, we talked about it, right? Like, when you compare that card to N'Zoth, or you compare it to other classes or other cards that have similar attributes, it's not even close, like, to the value. The it's so situational too. You have to have those cards in hand. It doesn't generate new cards, right? Like Nazoth. Nazoth actually generates new cards. It's much worse. So unfortunately the Warlock didn't get that. I mean, can you imagine if Cruel was some kind of powerful legendary? Oh my god, that Arena Lock would be insane. Okay, well, I have a priest too, and I mean, actually, following up with what you said about Shaman, Tyler, literally every archetype is represented by Shaman right now.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, maybe not combo, but, you know, you can Malygus combo too if you want, you know, with Shaman. But
you could, yeah.
Yeah, literally every single archetype is represented. And that's amazing. I mean, it's like totally awesome. Now, kind of coming into the priest, I think priest's tool set is, you know, catching up actually to Shaman. Maybe the power level isn't quite there, but damn, when this is a Reno priest I've been playing, and I was winning like 75% last night with it because people don't expect like Medivh aspect of it. So I was outvaluing Reno locks and stuff like that, which was kind of crazy. But yeah, so with the Reno priest, what's cool about the Reno priest versus the Reno lock is that I feel like there are like 50 cards to choose from to put into a Reno priest. You know, you can either go from the standpoint of a dragon angle or an OTK angle or just a straight value angle like mine is, or a Nazoth angle, which is mine's like a hybrid value Nazoth angle. There's so many things you can choose from that, I don't know, my gut tells me that Reno priest will be good, like will be the control deck eventually once people figure out just exactly the right, you know, everything just totally refined and whatnot, because the value, you know, yeah, Jiraxxus is amazing, but there are a lot of great things that you can fit into a Reno lock, even Nazoth, right? And Nazoth in some ways could you know, rival a Jiraxxus play at least for a few turns. But if you mix that with, you know, just some of the other like mind control or some of the other priest very oriented cards, then, you know, I think you could, you could beat a Reno just purely on value. And I don't know, something tells me that this priest with the tool sets it has will eventually be, just tier one. Not this one particularly, but, yeah. You know, one eventually.
Yeah, I agree with that. The thing with priest is Reno priest has never been competitive, right? And Reno lock has been competitive for like forever, for months.
Right. So it's refined.
It's been refined. And the whole combo package with Leroy and everything, the list was already there. Expansion came and you swap out a few cards and put the good cards in, and that's it. You have Reno lock and it's done. But priest hasn't been figured out yet, and I think there's definitely some potential there.
Yeah, everybody's just going towards the dragons, and, you know, rightfully so, because the, you know, Draconid is really good, right? Just with the Discover. That card is so frustrating, man. They just pick, especially this deck, because it has so much value. It's like, you're going to get a good card, like, guaranteed, right? But yeah, the dragon is the most obvious choice that everybody's going towards, but this is, like, playing this deck is so fun, because it's like a mindfuck, like, every single turn. It's like, literally, shit, do I just take a shitload of damage, you know, and then just like try to get it all back later, which is like a macro play, or, you know, do I invest onto the board knowing that they have board removal, and, you know, which minions am I able to get rid of and still be able to have a value at the end? And so it's extremely fun to play long games though. So if you like to play, you know, like to ladder up quick, then don't play this deck, because each game is like literally 20, 30 minutes. But yeah,
they're very, very long. And yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why the deck, like why Reno decks may not become quote unquote ladder meta ever. It's just, they're very intricate. They're very long, drawn out games you're going to be playing with it. And it's also so easy to make a mistake. Like,
slip up,
rest in peace. Like, your entire match is gone. You play the minion at the wrong time, you're dead. You played a Thought Steal too greedily, you're dead. You played an 8 drop where you should have just healed and played a 6, you're dead. Like, everything kills you if you slip up once, which is one of the reasons I think that you tend to see less of it maybe than, like, the first day. I feel like everybody was trying out the Reno stuff, and now it's like, okay, let me not play that stuff. It's just, it's not right. It's too slow. I'm not enjoying it anymore already, and we're like a few days in. I like it, but...
Yeah, I played a ton of it. I played all the different versions too. OTK is a lot of fun. Like the Beardo synergy is like a great. Sure. It's a great actually archetype. I mean, just design for a finish like that, but it's hard to stay alive. Like that's the biggest issue, right? So you have to heal a lot to even stay alive right now in the current meta, because the removal is just not there. Like I don't even have a dragon skin potion in this deck.
Yeah, you don't have Dragon Fire nor Justicar, yeah, which kind of surprises me.
Yeah, just because Justicar I don't actually need that much, but the really? It's surprising, but I don't actually feel like I need it. I'd rather just get like minion value from it. But I might be overkill on the value, to be honest, because there's some games I finish with a lot of value. Yeah, yeah. But so it can be refined by a lot, exactly. But I don't die to Shaman and Warrior in a crazy amount either. I probably like 50%, maybe 45% against those. So it's not.
It should be higher than that as Reno Priest. You have a good matchup against aggro. Like you're supposed to tear them up.
It's a rough one though, but I mean, it's a rough estimate as to what that is. I'm not keeping super track because I change it constantly too, right? So.
Oh, sure.
It's hard to tell. But yeah, I mean, those cards I definitely consider. I don't know. I just have been playing around, but like I was saying, you can choose between all these different cards. Like Injured Blade Master, I don't even know if it should be in there either. But you know, there's so many tools to play with and try out that, you know, guys like Tyler for sure will figure out like perfect ones eventually. And when you have that much to play with, there's got to be something good in it, in my opinion at least. But play it, guys. If you guys, just for folks that haven't gotten a chance to play it, I mean, just a rundown. There's obviously 30 cards, but it's got Nazoth in it. Doesn't have like a ton of Death Rattle. It's really just like Sylvanas and like your Shifting Shades and just Loot Horde and a few things like that. But it's got this one's got Medivh and Mind Control and stuff like that. That's just more gimmicky because people do play Ooze, obviously, right now.
I'll say one thing though about Reno Priest, that's one card that's undervalued. If you want to go greedy, right? Is Youthful Brewmaster. Like, you know, you play Medivh in that deck, you play Mind Control. Brewmaster is like another brand.
It is, yeah, for Kazakhs.
You want to win the Control Mirror, which if like against some decks, it can be really tough to win, to get like double Reno, double Kazakhs, if you think you're not going to get there. Brewmaster is like the jankiest of all cards, but because it's Priest, you actually put it on the do I play this list. Like, I wouldn't do that. I don't ask myself that question in any other deck, but because Priest has like 1,000 ways to build a deck, sometimes I wonder. It's super jank, but
yeah, this particular one doesn't have enough battle cry, but you could definitely have enough battle cry for it to. I find myself just waiting on Bran like sometimes.
Yeah,
definitely. I could play Museum. I had Museum Curator in here before too, which is like, oh my god,
death value.
Yeah, I mean, if I drop Medivh and all that stuff, you could probably put Curator in here, but yeah, give it a try, man. It's definitely a lot of fun. For sure.
I actually haven't played any Priest yet since expansion. Maybe like 5 games.
Now that you've gotten like rank 1 in Europe, and then I'm sure it's going to be rank 1 in NA and
it's just that
China
Priest
too,
was so overhyped.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah,
everyone was saying like Priest is going to be the best, that I just kind of held back on it and just save it for later and just played other stuff first.
Yeah, now it's cool. Now it's hipster again to play Priest.
Dude, I played my first deck was like Khoon C'Thun Druid, where you just
I still haven't done that yet.
Brand Brewmaster C'Thun. I actually have an interesting list right now, which I built. You know, I played Khoon and C'Thun.
That's disgusting.
I mean, I played that as Khoon and Aviana just for the value that they provide, as opposed to playing it for the combo play. I'm like, yeah, let's go all in and draw all the cards. Just play them because at some point you get a 9 drop, a 10 drop, and whatever the hell's in your hand. Like, you can go Aviana, Khoon into Nourish, draw a bunch of dudes, play them. Like, that's kind of Jade Idol-esque without being Jade Idol Druid.
I mean, it's your classic ramp dream, but the problem is just staying alive until then, right? Like, that's why the C'Thun works a little bit better.
But the funny thing is that the Khoon Druid decks, whichever build you do, it's not even a meme. It's actually viable.
It's actually close to really good. It's
pretty competitively viable, and... Mm-hmm. Once the list gets refined, I think it could be a top tier deck.
I agree.
I think the C'Thun one is a definite vibe. Like, some people are playing the Malagus one right now, right? The one where you Starfire for 15 or something, and you know that sort of thing. But that requires like 7 cards. It requires like 6 or 7 cards for you to have at the very end. Where like a C'Thun one is not. you know, like that. I mean, that one really requires just four cards. Like,
and you play Disciple of C'thun and the Dark Hour Koa anyway, right? Yeah. So like they kind of work in Druid.
They scale, you know, they kind of scale up with the game, whether it's against aggro or whatnot. So I feel like the C'thun one, at least so far, seems to be the best combo to finish with.
I've tried it, yeah, and I agree.
Yeah, it's cool. Everybody's coming out with different ways, man, to spend those those 10 one-drop, you know, turns.
Play all the Weasel Tunnelers!
I know.
Why? Well, because you can!
They fixed the Weasel Tunnelers! Dang it.
Oh, did they?
It was bugged for a while, but it was kind of funny being bugged, though. There were awesome videos that came out during that time. Totally. But anyways, we could sit here and talk like days about meta, but why don't we, why don't we talk a little bit about, we touched on a little bit, but Tyler, what's your most surprising card so far? Like for me, it was Dirty Rat, right? But for you, what's the most surprising
card? For me, Dirty Rat as well. That was a sleep for me. I thought it wouldn't have that much impact, but Dirty Rat in Reno Mirrors, that's
sick,
that's the most hated card ever.
It's sick.
And Dirty Rat into Doomsayer and then waiting for the RNG to see what you pull and then what your opponent pulls from his Dirty Rat. It's like Noxious said earlier, it can also be so triggering when Dirty Rat loses you the game, basically.
Yeah.
And then bad pull.
Alright, most disappointing card so far in your everybody's experiments right now. Or maybe not disappointing, maybe that you were really wrong about.
Really wrong about.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Greater Arcane Missiles because I thought the card would be literally the worst thing in the world. And it turned out to be actually pretty good when I played it. I wouldn't go like, I said this card was complete trash and unplayable and that was the best. But it's like, I went from this card is really, really bad to, I might actually play that in my mage deck. And actually, like, consider it for real. One thing I want to try, though, is a Lotus Assassin. I haven't gotten to play Rogue with that 5-drop yet. Like, I haven't even touched Rogue with that 5-drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance either to touch it. I'm trying to think of which one mine.
For me, personally, the Counterfeit coin.
Oh.
I thought it wouldn't be good enough, but it's blame enough.
Oh, you didn't think it'd be good enough.
I didn't think it'd be good enough, but it's seeing play in the Rogue decks right now.
Yeah.
And they're performing really well, actually.
Extra
and it's
mana,
combination of the coin and that Rogues gets the pirate package that Rogue is only viable now.
Yeah.
Thank God. They have no healing still, which really hurts them, so they really need to get, like, they need to be more aggressive than maybe they'd like, which is, I mean, the position of Rogue is always to need to dictate the game. If they don't dictate the game, then they're going nowhere, unfortunately.
Yeah. I'm trying to still think what would be the... I think the Hunter cards, and I'm not sure if it's because of the Hunter cards themselves or just because Hunter as a whole is just so bad. I don't think the Rat pack has been as big a impact. Also, Kodo's great, but I don't think the Kodo card has had that much of an impact either. So, I thought those cards were great. I know, that's one thing. I'm not sure if it's actually because they're just not good or just because... You know, the class itself as a whole is just too weak right now.
Yeah.
Could be some of that.
Here's the question, right? Like, here's the big question. All the weapon classes right now that are good are all running a patches list. And Hunter happens to not have that shit. Hence, they can't play. I'm going to go there. Like, it's not, I don't think patches is broken. Like, as in, the card is single-handedly too OP, but the concept of what it does is so strong, like, it feels insane not to try to include it in your list. And Hunter just has no real way to enable it. I don't have Nuzzoth's First Mate. You know, Warrior
no
can cheat it out with Nuzzoth's First Mate. Rogue has the Dagger baseline. Paladin can play and has played Life's Justice just to meme people down in the aggro list. And now you have Hunter's like, well, I have a 3-cost weapon. Does that do the trick? No, it fucking doesn't. So suddenly, like, the pirate packet is not viable unless you curve much later, and so you're surrendering Beasts, and that's just silly, but Beasts is just a tad too slow to where it feels like the Grimy Goons Paladin list. Like, across the board, the entire, like, Hunter list that I've seen so far all feel like I'm playing the Grimy Goons list for Palia, which is, I better curve flawlessly, or I'm done. I'm just done.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, agreed. Actually, I know one. I mean, you were actually right about this, you and Zalay, which Mana Geode is just trash right now.
It is trash.
Yeah, it's definitely trash. I mean, Dirty Rat's so much better than Neon Geo. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, I don't see that card getting played. I was playing Divine Spirit just to so I could like get that thing to survive. Okay, like that's like the only reason I was playing Divine Spirit.
What a memer.
It was ridiculous, man.
You meme too much, dude.
Just a single one, single one. It's actually not that bad, Divine Spirit by itself. But all right. Well, why don't we do some Mechatorx Workshop? Just, you know, maybe some cards. Myself, actually, you know, before we do that, why don't we give a shout out to our patrons and let me see, I'm gonna bring this up real quick. Of course, we've got a Patreon to support the show. Value Time is 100% supported by you guys, the fans and the Patreons, and we're lucky enough to have a lot of great Patreons still maintaining that level, that milestone that we you know, to continue doing the show. So it's amazing and really, really feels great to have you guys supporting the show. But big thanks to our legendary producers, Mike T and Lewis G, and as well as a few others, Eli B, K. Michael W, Esser C, Devin W, Thomas O, Jacob P, Albert, Graham S, Matthias S, Jason B, and Ed H. Thank you so much for doing that. And we of course still have our milestone, our smile segment milestone. So it's that time of the show, guys. Are you ready? Are you ready to give your best smile? Yes, he was warned.
I'm ready.
He was warned. All right. Here we go. All right, starting now. Talk to the smile. It's too freaking good, dude. I don't know. Yeah. He's getting tired. Okay. I think that's where we end. When Noxious is getting tired from his fake smile. our real smile. Sorry.
It wasn't a fake smile. It was the truest of all smiles.
Okay. The truest of all smiles
that's ever been seen.
That's right. That's for you guys, the patrons. Thank you so much again for supporting. Yeah. And if
this
you guys.
Is a milestone for those of you who don't know what it is, but on Patreon, if we reached a certain milestone, we would then smile the camera creepily for, well, you know, this amount of time.
That was my highlight of the day. It was best moment.
How did I know Tyler would just freaking love that part of the show, his favorite part? But we have another milestone that's the next one too. So if you guys want to support the show, make a pledge, it'd be amazing. And you don't have to, but obviously it definitely helps us out, helps us continue doing the show. And the next milestone is we get to create some cool voice lines for you, so you can use on your phone or wherever you want to use when you want to hear our voices pretending to be Hearthstone cards or emotes or whatnot. So you can take a look at that at patreon.com/valuetown, and thank you so much for that. Speaking of patrons, we have patrons send in some of their Mechatorx Workshop cards too, so we can talk on the show. And for those of you who've never seen Mechatorx Workshop, it's the segment where we come up with our own cards. And you know, usually me and Noxious will come up, Zalea or whatnot, we'll come up with some cool cards. Today we've got patron Cacper K that has two very cute cards that I just had to talk about, and they're two Murloc cards. So they gotta be cute if they're Murlocs, right? Oh, actually, I don't have them. Here, I gotta get them real quick. All right, so we've got Murloc Regimen Mint, which is an 8-drop. And then we have...
Oh, my God.
We have the Great General Tiny Finn, which is...
What? A one mana 1/1 with Divine Shield. Yes,
This is so awesome, dude.
8 mana, summon 2 Murloc Knights and the Great General Tiny Finn. This is by far the coolest card I've been sent.
Yep, me too.
Type of content ever.
Yep.
By far.
We got awesome patrons, man, for Valueton. But I just couldn't, this had to be on the show. This was freaking amazing. And, you know, summon 2, 3, 4, like 2 Murloc Knights? That's not bad. I mean,
I'm going to play this on turn 10, all
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
That's
great.
Board.
And then you've got the general, man. The general has a 1/1. with Divine Shield. You got the meme aspect of this too. But Tyler, like, is that playable? Is an 8?
It seems pretty OP to me.
Yeah, it does seem OP. Dude, like, on turn 10.
Fill the board. Yeah.
Anything can happen, so what?
Yeah, exactly. Well, right, right. And you fill the board instantly. That's seven. That's a 7 minion drop. No, actually, you can't do turn 10, right? With oh no, you get this guy too, right? So it is turn 10. Yeah. You get 7 minions. That is pretty amazing. Blizzard, I hope you're looking at this. We could totally use this card in Paladin. For real. Actually, that might be pretty damn good. Be amazing to extend it. But yeah, Cacfer, that's an amazing card. Keep those coming. Actually, he has a few other ones that I didn't get a chance to look at closely that we might have to bring on the next show. But I also came up with one, just a real quick one, that I thought would be interesting for Druid. And I thought about, like, developing just the, you know, we've talked about Treants before, right, on our, mm-hmm. our show.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, we do have a Treant type of tribe. But definitely, I feel like Druid, even though we do have portals and even Feral Rages, could use a little bit more health, especially with, you know, just how crazy aggro is right now. So created this card. It might be broken just with Wild Growth.
I think it's
or
fine.
Not Wild Growth, Living Root. Living Root.
It's balanced to me.
It's balanced?
A card that would not be auto-include, but could be used in some decks.
Yeah, I agree. It's a build around. It's great. So 3-mana, 2/4 Treant. Mm-hmm. Whenever you summon a minion, restore 2 health to your hero.
Yeah, so basically Living Root. It's got synergy with Living Root for some quick ones. And I don't know, maybe it would encourage, you know, playing, I don't know, maybe not, Whispers of the Old God. Wisps of the Old Gods, or encourage them to make some minions like that. I can see a Treant type of play, or maybe Force of Nature, right? Force of Nature just with the three cards. Any of these kind of token generations I think would be pretty cool with this card. Yeah, so I thought that'd be an interesting addition to Druid.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I like the card, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely work.
Yeah,
it's
so...
It's a simple design, but it's elegant.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, if you guys have any cards like this, especially our patrons or our patrons of Value Talon, go ahead and send those in. Again, ValueTalon at ChamMV.tv, and we'll definitely show them and take a look at them. Okay, the next part, we do have a little bit of a news that I thought was kind of interesting that was at the top of Reddit, which is China's forcing devs to reveal loot box probabilities. So, you know, that includes things like Hearthstone packs, you know, and things like that. And I don't know. What do you guys think of that? I mean, it's just kind of a, you know, kind of a random topic. But of course, it does involve Hearthstone as well as things like Overwatch and anything, right? And even like CSGO or whatever, right?
Yeah.
What do you think? Transparency in all these things? Are they hiding anything? I don't think Blizzard's hiding anything when it comes to this, right?
It's not that. It's that, like, gambling is... Like, gambling in games that are so, like, of such mass appeal to young people. Like, if you're a parent and you don't know what the hell is going on, like, what the odds are, your kid's just buying these boxes and he's having fun, whatever the case may be. Like, you'd like to know if this is legitimately something he can purchase and actually enjoy for sure. But the truth of it is, like, a lot of the time, and I don't think it's as true in the case of Overwatch, but... The odds are so skewed against the player that it's just bad. In the case of Overwatch, no matter what happens, you can't trade the skins. I don't really care about that, right? Like, for me, CSGO is more of an issue on that front. Or whenever they're tradable for real money between people, then it's actual gambling. For, you know, games like Overwatch, and I don't really think it's that.
And Hearthstone included, too. Like, Hearthstone, we can't trade cards, right? So,
yeah, Hearthstone, it's no problem at all, in my opinion.
Yeah. We can see if that all those theories are actually true, right? The 40 pack, no legend, you get a legend, right? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's proven at this point, right? Enough people have had enough data to prove that, at least theory. But what the average is, I guess, would be interesting to see. I don't think there's any other bit of news right now in the community. So yeah, anyways, why don't we go into the Q&A section of the show where we have all of you guys email us questions, including patrons and everybody. And we've actually got some really, really good ones this week. So let me bring it up real quick, and then we'll start off with... I don't know if we can go chronological. I'll just choose them kind of as we're going. We actually have one that I am curious about the answer to, too, because I've always responded with the fact that Hearthstone, right? We always talk about, you know, card games need good cards and bad cards, right? And we never actually really talked about it. So Brenton actually asks, you know, he's been playing Hearthstone since beta, and, you know, multiple sources over the years say that the game needs good cards and bad cards for each expansion or adventure. And, he, you know, he does understand, it says that, I do understand that some cards should be better in certain situations or in certain decks. I've never yet heard a strong, thought out response as to why there should be objectively bad cards ever printed. So yeah, that's basically his question. Like, why should there be bad cards in any TCG game?
Well, if you need a quick and concise answer, because that's the only strong argument you'll find from me, is not a design one. Like, hey, you need to give people a lot of filler. It's an economy related thing, where Arcane Dust is something you craft stuff with. You can't just give people a huge amount of dust, lest they don't need to buy your stuff. And so you give them a bunch of filler, and that filler needs to be something they don't need. So either you give them duplicates of strong cards, or you give them like even more filler in the form of bad cards. Now, this is the only argument that exists to me that makes any sense is that one. And I respect the devil, come out and say it. But there is like the other argument I think is fringe is new players need to want to play with bad cards. See their collection improve, you know, when they pick up an objectively better card, like Booty Bay Bodyguard to Evil Heckler, and they go like, hey, this is better. And they've learned to compare in that one little moment, that little Eureka moment, they've learned to compare two variables, which maybe they hadn't paid too much attention to. They look at the meta cost, and now they get it. They're like, oh yeah, cheaper card with the same cost is with the same effect is probably better.
That's creep, though. That's power creep, I mean, right?
It's power creep, but they want to help players spot it.
Okay.
Because a lot of players who you present to card games, like you show them Magma Rager, they'll be like, that's a pretty good card. It's got 5 attack for 3 mana. And then eventually they realize, well, I could just get, you know, a 4-2 with stealth instead in the Juggle Panther. And they're like, well, suddenly this doesn't die to Arcane Missiles, doesn't die to Arcane Explosion. So arguably these two cards are pretty bad, but Magma Rager is made to be bad, right? Like it's made to be a meme. And it's just a comparison point for new players. It would be like the second best argument.
I think he doesn't have a question about meme cards. You know what I mean? Like those have entertainment value, right? And
okay,
and,
then what?
But maybe just like the super vanilla cards. They're just not good. Like, why have those cards?
Arena? You need those for Arena.
Yep.
For Arena, yeah.
Is it purely Arena?
The other argument is also random effects in Hearthstone. So like you can pull bad cards and you can pull good cards. From portals and stuff.
Yeah, that's true too.
Has a 5 drop, it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it has, yeah, I agree with you guys. It has mostly to do with those random draws and Arena and, you know, I don't have experience in Magic and other games like that. So this is like strictly speaking from Hearthstone. And the relativity aspect of it is somewhat like, I guess, a reason, but it is more so that, you know, you can alter the percentages like of the effectiveness of RNG cards. Can you imagine if every RNG card, discover card, or random card gave you a good card? Those would just be play. They wouldn't be random anymore. They would just be good.
There's also a caution factor. I mean, if you're looking at like, you know, cards like Power Word Glory, right? You know, looking at that priest card, it's a bad card, but I don't think it was intended to be bad, right? Yeah. There are cards that turn out bad that aren't intended to be bad, but there are cards, as you said, that are meant not to be played in a real deck. Like Worgen Greaser and the 3-mana 4/3 with Taunt, which actually I was for a while just looking at, you know, it seemed like half decent.
Yeah.
There are cards that just are vanilla because they want to give you a good baseline. Like here, you can pay 3-mana for a 4/3 with Taunt. Now I print this new minion that's a 3-mana 2/3 with an ability. Is that worth more? Is losing 2 attack and taunt worth the ability? Is the question you have to ask yourself. If you don't have those points of reference, it's actually pretty hard to evaluate what a card is relative to another, especially when you start factoring in synergies, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, a card like Light Warden or Holy Champion, you could get a Yeti or you could get Holy Champion. Like, what do you want? Do you want to get the buff or do you want to get the vanilla guy? So,
yeah,
I think that's really the best argument, but like, I'm still not sold on it. You know, I'm telling you it, but you could make the game without those cards and people will play them just the same. So ultimately, I always go back to Well, you need fill-in card packs because the economy was set up that way.
Yeah. Good explanation there. Okay, so Ahmed N asks, and Tyler, we'll have this one. We'll ask you this one. Do you think that the rise of the pirates will stay as its deck that as a deck that can be countered with tech choices, not like its predecessors, cough, mid-range shaman, and because it punishes non-optimal decks that are still brewing? Okay,
wait,
so
can you repeat that
yeah, so I think what he is asking is basically, do you think the rise of the pirate aggro decks that we see, and I'm just assuming he's talking about warrior and shaman right now, do you think that that they can be countered with tech choices, unlike, you know, and he, I think he's talking about power level, so unlike its predecessors, like another the previously, you know, master of all, which was a mid-range shaman.
Yeah.
Do you think there are can it be countered by tech choices?
Yeah, and definitely. Decks, aggressive decks are, there's a lot of tools right now to counter aggressive decks.
Yeah.
And in the first few days when Pirate Warrior was a thing, mm-hmm. every single deck started running ooze or even double ooze.
And still losing.
Pirate Warrior itself yeah. ran ooze. That was just so ridiculous to me.
Yeah, it was.
But there's just so many tools to counter it, and the most obvious one is just Reno Lock right now. Just Reno decks, like
super heals,
stabilize, and yeah. then you heal back to 30, and you win.
Yeah, it helps a lot that you have tools that help you without necessarily needing a Reno specifically, right? Like that's the thing. The reason it's so strong is because it used to be like against Face Hunter or mid range Hunter. If you were Reno Lock and they curved and they hit you in the face repeatedly, you had to get really lucky and pick up that Reno off the top without tapping because you were dead.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, I can stall long enough to likely find Reno. Like, I'll be 50% on it, and if I don't, then I'm still okay. I've got other things I can do. So it's really come down to, like, the array of options you have. And it's always easier, I feel, to tech against that kind of stuff than against a good mid-range deck. Like, if you remember mid-range Druid with its combo finisher, or mid-range Shaman with the burst, like Spirit Claws with
yeah.
Bolt and
the double
whatever the hell they're yeah. doing even right now, if they want to. Like, stopping a mid-range deck and teching against it is so much harder, like, than teching against an aggro deck. Because you can, it's not polarized at all. It's just got a decent array of things to do throughout the entire game. So,
you know, one thing I realized wasn't in that shaman deck that we looked at, hold on, there was some talk of Doomhammer for a while, right? And I guess Doomhammer hasn't really made the cut in the most recent version of this
because of ooze.
Yep. Yeah, because of ooze, strictly because of, that's true, that makes sense. So I would say that yeah, it can be countered, but that this shaman deck I'm showing right now is not easily countered. It's not just throw up a bunch of taunts and just heal because of the 7/7s mostly. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it is counterable just percentage. Unlike the shaman literally beat everything except for like one deck. So it's not going to oppress the game in that kind of fashion. But this is really hard to beat right now. Like,
I mean, you can beat it with like mid-range shaman with healing wave and Jinyu, for instance. Like, we've seen mid-range shaman come up with like yeah. Jinyu water speakers and mm-hmm. healing wave. It's a bit heavy because then you have to run like the double ooze package and it gets like really crazy. But it has been played and it's been doing fairly well.
Yes, this deck definitely loses to mid-range shaman. I mm-hmm. kept losing to mid-range shaman as well with this list. And it's just, that's just how the meta works, right? Everything mm-hmm. keeps each other in check because there's Reno Lock. People don't want to play mid-range shaman.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Exactly. Oh, and just to clarify, like mid-range shaman right now, what are we talking about? Are we talking about like Thunderbluffs and stuff like that, like before? Or are mm-hmm. we talking about Jade mid-range?
Just the old school Thunderbluffs.
Okay, just the old school.
Old school. And then right. probably just right now, you probably would need to run Bloodlust and you can run healings as well. The Jinju healer.
Right.
And so it would destroy this deck. It would destroy the Fae Shaman deck.
Right.
And you have a reasonable chance against Reno. So I don't think mid-range Shaman is in a terrible spot right now. It's just that everyone is trying new decks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of my big fears, you know, when the expansion was announced, I was like, okay, so if Jade Druid's too good, you know, Rogue comes out and punishes it. And if we have a control deck that's too good, the only answer is going to be combo OTK, right? Like, that's usually the way it goes. And now with Reno Lock, there's really very little that beats it aside from, like, Mali Druid, which is horribly positioned against the rest for the time being. Yeah. I think spell-based Druid decks are still going to be a go-to. Like, very soon, I think we'll see, like, the meta go back in that general direction, because it just seems to be what Druid will need to do.
With Yogg and stuff like that? I mean, Frozen was still playing it in Batstone. It's a very spell-centric Druid. Yeah.
I didn't see it.
I don't think it had... I'm not sure it had Malagus in it, because I didn't necessarily stay around to see it, but it was like, instead of having Malagus as endgame, he had Jade Idols as endgames, that sort of thing. But he had Yogg in it, and definitely some Yogg rolls. Those are interesting for sure. And I played some of it too. I have a Jade deck that I'm still brewing right now that has a Yogg at the end of it too. But
I had a Reno Priest with Yogg against me last time.
Oh yeah.
That happened.
Reno Priest with Yogg. What the hell?
Yeah, he did it. He had like the biggest balls on earth. And just went Yogg.
Like, he didn't have enough value. He just, let's just get some more stuff. Jeez, let's get some more cards or whatnot. So we have another question about Jade Druid from Jaren Stett. He asks, I have a strategy question about new Jade Druid decks, and especially about Jade Idol. When you play it, you dilute your deck with three more Jade Idol cards, which means you will draw into your ramp and card draw less consistent. So what is the best time to play this card? And when you draw it, when is the best time to play this card when you draw it into your opening hand?
Turn one as a 1/1.
Yep. No, seriously.
That's my only answer to this. Like,
first one, turn one.
Generally, at least the first one, you always play it as a 1/1. You never put it in your deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no point in holding it, and like you said, Jaren, it's like there's no point in diluting your deck because you need those other cards. Just because it costs one mana doesn't mean you're drawing a bunch of them, unless you have the auctioneer just triggering, and it's a high chance that you're going to be drawing it, and that only happens at the end of games. So I think the best strategy is to hold an auctioneer and a Jade Idol until the end of the game, and that's when you just go nuts with it. A lot of people don't do that, but a lot of people, a lot of lower level folks, they definitely will draw three, and that's actually really bad when you draw three.
Really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say that right now, my favorite way to play Druid would have to be like the old school Arcane Giant stuff without combo and with Jade Idol as a one of, because you can infinitely shuffle. Like, you don't even have to go all in on the Jade theme. Which we've seen, kind of be
six
the
cards.
Trend.
Yeah, if you get six cards, it's probably
like you really don't need to. Is the interesting thing?
You have to have enough though, otherwise the Jade Idol train is just too weak.
No, you
to
just
even
need
win.
One Jade Idol. Like, you really just need one Jade Idol in a typical deck, and you'll just play your usual Arcane Giants, your Ancients of War, if you want to play both. You know, your Nourish Shenanigans with Barnes. Like, you don't need to go crazy on it.
That was my initial impression too. Like, I literally thought it would be the Malagus Druid, just replacing Malagus with just Jade Idols, like that sort of thing. I thought it would be something like that, or maybe, replace them in fire and just build the Jade theme just a little bit more instead. But when I was playing, I just had a hard time staying alive. It was kind of hard. I've had to put more taunts in that deck just to stay alive against aggro, and then, allow me to get to the end game. Because I can survive mid-range decks. I just can't survive that warrior and shaman.
Well, you need
to
play Doomsayer, right? Like, if you want to beat those decks in Druid, I think you'd have to go like a control route with it.
Have you tried Jade Druid, Tyler?
Yeah, I hit Legend with it. And
okay,
it was, I did it in one of the first few days when Warrior was a thing. So just went full taunt and then
Me too.
Jade, so it was played more like a mid-range deck. And very often you don't need the infinite value from the Jade Idol, and then only in certain matchup you recognize the matchup and then you go for infinite value. Mm-hmm. So
so we're talking Druid of the Claws, right? We're talking Druid of the Claws and Ancient of Wars and stuff like that.
Yeah, I even saw people running double Ancient of War and one Druid of the Claw at some point to counter all the warriors.
Yeah, I'm running, I think, the opposite. I think two Druid of the Claws and one Ancient of War. Because that was what I'm doing.
I went Rag instead of Second Ancient. I play like double Feral Rage, the Roots. I only play one Jade Idol. So far, the deck has been running pretty well. Like, you play the Arcane Giants, you don't need Mali. Like, you have to cut Fires because the OTK version is not necessary. Just infinite anti fatigue is just good enough, I find.
Yeah, it's cool. It's definitely a cool mechanic. to. I mean, I still hate the fact that it just kills the Teak. Literally, Control Warrior guys is dead. I mean, when I get Control Warrior, I just laugh. Like, it's just like, I'm so sorry, dude. You should concede.
It's so sad.
You literally should just concede right now because you literally have zero chance to beat me.
There are so many Control Warrior players who are so sad right now.
Yeah, it's, and Control Warrior has been a part of the meta for consistently, I would say, pretty much the extent of Hearthstone.
Yeah,
I mean, only the beginning where it was it not super good. It wasn't until that crazy, I remember Monk showing me this crazy Golden Warrior deck, like a long, like it was like all legends, like 10, 12 legends at the end of it or something. It wasn't until, you know, maybe mid beta that, you know, Control Warrior came into the picture. But since then, it's always been in the picture. You know, Fatigue Warriors, just Value Warriors, whatever, right? Elise Warriors, C'Thun Warriors, whatever. Now it's just, you're just dead. I mean, you just, you don't have Kazakus. You know, you don't have, you just don't have that additional card that gives you like another two 10 mana cards or whatever that can carry you into the late game. So sad times for Warrior, to be honest. And if the aggro Warrior doesn't stay on top or stay strong or viable, which it sounds like it's starting to come off, then I don't even know what Warrior to play. I mean, Dragon Warrior's still decent.
I think mid-range is going to have... Like, I don't think the hyper aggro Warrior is the best list. I think it's actually a horrible trend that we've seen every expansion where first few days, hyper aggro anything is, like, destroying the world. And then within a week, people are like, oh, well, I guess it's not a face meta anymore. Well, it wasn't. It's just no one knew what the fuck to do. So we gravitated towards the obvious option, which is, hey, we have 29 cards in the basic set that still work the same way they used to. Let's play them together and make Aggro Warrior. Like, that's still the same deck we had in beta, dude. Like,
it really is, except for the small-time Racketeer.
With the small-time Buccaneers and everything. It's like almost the same card.
It's pretty darn close, actually.
The truth of it is, like, it's never going to be the best version of Warrior, I feel. Unless something drastic happens, playing it a bit slower is likely better. And
well, the question is whether there is a mid-range deck right now. Like, I think Dragon's the closest thing. And
Dragon Warrior is still pretty good. I mean
Dragon Warrior is... it's actually Dragon Pirate Warrior.
Dragon Pirate, yeah.
Is it really? Okay, I've never played the Dragon Pirate Warrior. Is it really? Okay.
But that list has been taken over now. It's way better than just the pirate list, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So how many pirates? There's four, just the four pirates or something?
Just the pirate package.
Yeah, the pirate package.
Yeah, generally, just the pirate package. The five pirates.
Okay.
Buccaneer, Saucy Deckhand, and the patches.
All right. Not much removal then, I guess, right? Just try to fit in all the cards. Because the dragon package like takes up a lot already, so adding another six cards there. Okay, I have to try that out because I mean I was definitely doing really well with Dragon Warrior during the whole mid range shaman age because the dragon package was so good, right? So I might have to try that out. Okay, and let's see. Maybe we might wrap it up after this question here. Unless anybody else has questions, you can email those to valuetown@championv.tv. Edda R asks, what's your Mean Streets of Gadgetzan top three cards so far?
As in most fun or like our
just top three. It could be personal, could be just, you know, you can give whatever reason you want.
I'm going to go with Kazakus as like number one. It's hard to say no to Kazakus. One card that I really, really liked that didn't really work out too well is Brass Knuckles and Warrior, the 4-mana weapon.
Oh, yeah.
That's been great too. I've loved that. And Cabal Courier, which I think is actually not a bad card for Reno Cabal decks, obviously. I've loved that. 3-mana 2/2 that draws a card from one of the classes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, for me personally, I'm known as a cancer play. I just play whatever.
we know who you are.
We know who you are,
Tyler. We watch your stream enough.
Like, I'm the complete opposite from you guys. Like, you guys are fun.
Then you balance us, dude. You keep us in check.
But for me, it's patches. Patches.
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay.
Yes, carried me to rank one just now. So that's on one. Okay. And Kazakus has made Reno Log or even Reno Dex more fun than it's ever been for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been enjoying Reno Dex a lot. So Kazakus on two. And on three, I actually don't know. But I've been having fun with
Jade Claws.
Jade Idol.
Jade Idol. Yeah, Jade Idol.
Yeah,
Jade Idol is definitely great. Okay, for me, all right, Kazak is absolutely number one would be Kazak is. Number two, and so this isn't a card that I've actually played a ton with, but it's just a card that I think is just really well. I mean, Blizzard did a good job with it. So Mayor Noggenfogger, right? Mayor Noggenfogger, I love. And like, this is the card that basically Yogg-Saron should have been. You know, there's no questions. This is a fun as hell card. It's done in the right way. It causes just the most hilarious moments ever. And it can happen. Like, people can get it. Like, and when it happens, it's like Nozdormu moments. This is a beautiful meme card. And that's, you know, we need that kind of stuff in Hearthstone. So that card and, God, the last one. Let me see. I'd have to look. I don't want it to be too boring. Maybe Wide Eyes. There's something about Wide Eyes. I really, really like. Because that Storm Guardian is, you know, when we were first reviewing it, I thought it was really good, right? And, you know, everybody thought it was too slow. But that Storm Guardian card always comes down before, like, Jade cards can handle it. And it's super powerful. It's won me so many games, like, so many very long games. I just, like, literally throw one Storm Guard or two Guardians down, and I just win the game. So that card's felt really, really great. But getting it to actually work, you know, value-wise, is not easy. So it's a challenge. It's like, it rewards you for keeping it alive somehow, or not getting it polymorphed or hexed or anything like that. So yeah, that's a good one too. All right, well, I don't think there's any more questions, so great show, great first show after the release. I'm sure the coming weeks are going to be a lot of fun too. We have an episode 100 coming up, guys, and I'm trying to figure it out. Binoxa is going to be out of town, like Seed Stories next week. So I'm trying to figure out how we're going to do it, when we're going to do it, because I kind of feel weird not doing it with you. And, you know, I do want to make it a special episode with, like, Blizzard folks, and Trump's going to come back too. We can reminisce some, I don't know, or just talk about whatever. I mean,
if you want to set it up for next week, it's no big deal. You can just enjoy the show and be on the back lines.
Yeah, I'll have to see. If not, it'll have to be right before Christmas or whatnot. And we might end up having a Christmas episode kind of combined with episode 100. So you guys might have to be on the lookout for that, and I'll definitely fill you in. But it's a scheduling craziness right now. Hearthstone has so many events in December. It's really crazy. Like, there's Seed Story. There's a Chinese event that Ty's told me that he's going to, too. And then there's some
one in January as well.
Yeah.
Like, pretty early in January.
Exactly. So I'm trying to get a few things in there. I'm trying to do a streamer showdown at the end of the month too. So actually Noxious hopefully will be hosting that too. So be on the lookout, guys. We'll have a lot of cool things. And, but episode 100, I do want to make a special episode for everybody and just kind of celebrate that. But Tyler, pleasure having you on, man. I've been watching your stream forever. So it's been great, you know, getting a chance to actually talk some cards and decks and have you on the show.
It was a pleasure for me as well. I didn't even know you knew who I was yet, so.
I lurk in everybody's streams. I just never talk and chat because I'm always doing something else while I'm watching everybody. So, yeah, totally. I've been watching you for a while, dude. Totally.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it was nice to meet you. And also nice to meet Noxious as well. This was the first time I talked to him.
Oddly enough.
We're actually teammates.
Well, I'm excited to see. So what's your plan for this year in competitive? Like, are you going to go competitive player? Because, I mean, you're always at the top of ladders, so.
Yes, I mean, I'm going to be competitive. And so I'm trying to get one in points in my region to qualify for BlizzCon directly. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. Like, going all out.
Awesome. And he's in EU, guys. Yeah. So he's number one EU right now. So it's just a matter of holding it for another 23 days. Is that easy, right? Totally easy. But where can people find you? You want to do any shout-outs?
Tyler OOTD. That's my handle for everything on Twitch.
What does OOTD stand for, by the way?
It stands for Outfit of the Day.
What?
It makes no sense at all, but it has to do with my background.
Outfit
I used to be a fashion photographer before I did Hearthstone.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And she can teach some of us how to dress in our community. Okay, so sorry, your Twitter is actually your Twitter's here on the overlay. What am I talking about?
Tyler OOTD. Yeah. It's not Tyler Rooted, it's Tyler Outfit of the Day.
Yeah. You can check out the stream there too, guys. So go ahead and check that out. Follow if you want to see, you know, top level ladder play. Probably cancer play right now, but it's top level though. It's totally top level. Yeah. So, when do you usually stream, by the way?
This time.
Okay, this time. Oh, so thanks for taking your time out.
Right about this time. So if there's no Valley Town, then come and watch my stream, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, actually, Valley Town is usually on Wednesday, so it doesn't usually overlap, at least on this day. Noxious, shout-outs? Where can people find you?
Shout-out to Complexity. As usual, you can find me on YouTube on Noxious, GLHF, and on Twitch, Noxious_HS, when I play Hearthstone, which these days I tend to split my time into more games. That way I don't actually get burnt out on playing too much of the card slinging. Just take a break when I have to. Feels good.
Good strategy. Definitely a good strategy. Burnout is bad. Absolutely bad. I'll round things out. Thank the two of you guys for doing the show and everybody for watching. All the folks for sending emails and patrons for sending their cards and all their great well wishes and whatnot. Thank you so much for that. You can find the VODs for Valuetown on youtube.com/ChamMV. The VOD for this channel or this show, if you missed it a little bit of it earlier, will be up in about 20-30 minutes. So definitely tune in for that. If you are on iTunes, and by the way, we didn't give a shout out to our iTunes folks too. Do want to give a shout out to Nirvana13A for leaving a 5-star rating. If you do listen to it on iTunes, the latest episode will be available tomorrow morning. Maybe even tonight, depending on when iTunes updates it. And if you do enjoy the show, if you leave a 5-star review and, you know, a short message, it helps the show in a big way, helps folks find Valuetown whenever they're trying to find a Hearthstone podcast on iTunes. So, if you feel like doing that, that'd be awesome. That would help the show. And I think that's going to be it, guys, for the show this week. So for Tyler, Noxious, and myself, ChamManV, see you hopefully next week. If not, sometime in the very near future.
See ya.
Bye.